Lecture 4, The Huguenots.
Having set forth the structure of French politics and society on the eve of the wars of religion, in this lecture we now turn to religion itself, in particular to Calvinism, which was the most common form of Protestantism in France. John Calvin himself was born in Picardy in northeastern France in 1509. He was trained as a lawyer and did some time at the University of Paris. In 1536, under suspicion of heresy, he fled to the Swiss city of Geneva. He settled there, and there he also published his most famous work, The Institutes of the Christian Religion, which was published in its first edition in 1536 and subsequently went through several other editions. Except for a brief hiatus between 1538 and 1541, Calvin spent the rest of his life in Geneva. He acted as the spiritual head of the city, as the moral watchdog of the city, and indeed he had very considerable political power there, which he retained until his death in 1564. Like other Protestant reformers, Calvin laid enormous emphasis on both the omnipotent sovereignty of God and also on the impotence and sinfulness of human beings. Calvin's sense of the sinfulness of human beings was at least as complete as Luther's. According to Calvin, man was a slave to sin, the meaning of which is that his spirit is so wholly alienated from the righteousness of God that he neither knows, desires, nor undertakes anything that is not wicked, perverse, iniquitous, and defiled. Strong words. Given Calvin's views on the profundity of human sinfulness, it's hardly surprising that he should have asserted that salvation came only through predestination, that is to say, the idea that those who are saved because God destines them for salvation before they're even born, rather than through anything that they themselves do. For Calvin to be logically consistent, we would have to see it that God actively chooses to either redeem human beings or to damn them. God can't be thought as doing anything really by default, and therefore God actively wills the salvation of those who will be saved and the damnation of those who will not. Luther himself was a little bit ambiguous on the predestination to damnation. He was pretty clear on the fact that those who are saved by being predestined by God. He left out at least an explicit discussion of how it is that people are damned. Calvin, as a lawyer, was much more consistent and more thorough on this point, and he was quite explicit that you're damned because God wills that you be damned. Indeed, Calvin went on to say that if we ask why God takes pity on some and why he lets go of others and leaves them, there is no answer other than it pleases God to do so. Now, having set forth that kind of a relationship between God and God's creatures, I think it's unsurprising that Calvin would also have insisted that there's a kind of existential chasm between God and creation, that human beings can never hope to understand the mind of God. And for that reason, Calvin and Calvinists in general would be really offended by any effort to represent God visually. And for that reason, Calvinists tended to oppose religious imagery, religious statues. They tended, in other words, to be iconoclasts. Actually, in this regard, it's rather like the Islamic position, that it's presumptuous of human beings to try and represent the transcendent. Now, Calvin also insisted that election to salvation was inconceivable without a kind of moral regeneration that he usually called sanctification. And there are two aspects of sanctification that I think deserve special emphasis. First of all, sanctification is not a sudden or instantaneous process. It's really a lifelong kind of struggle. And furthermore, and this is the second feature, the life of the regenerate Christian doesn't consist solely in penitence. Also important for the Christian to lead a holy and a stainless and a sinless life. And this very austere ethos of everyday conduct was a kind of a characteristic note of Calvinism in early modern Europe. Where there is no sanctification, Calvin would say, the election to salvation, which is a logically prior condition, must necessarily be absent. That is to say, eternal election is in no way a blank check for the rest of your life. If you're predestined to salvation, you've got to have that sanctification. You've got to live that holy and sinless life. Crucially, the election to salvation manifests itself by clear and positive signs in the lives of the elect. Now, this point is actually a little bit tricky, because sometimes Calvin seems to, in his writings, discern the proof of election in the works, the good works, the holy life that proceeds from faith.